Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in the city of Odessa versus Wendy G. Park.
Thank you, Mr. Board. Mr. Jim O'Leary will present argument from petitioner.
May it please the court, my name is Jim O'Leary. I have lived in Odessa and practiced law there with the Schaefer Davis firm for something in excess of 35 years. My privilege today to represent my hometown. In this case, in which the lower courts dismantled a comprehensive administrative scheme set up to determine whether or not there was just cause for terminating a city employee. This case, of course, begins with a personnel policy and procedure manual, because that is where Mr. Barton got his just cause status. But the manual did a lot more than that. The manual defined just cause. The manual provided an administrative process for resolving issues relating to just cause. And significantly, the manual gave the administrative body, called a hearings panel, the power to remedy terminations, suspensions, disciplinary action. They could restore a discharged employee to his position with all pay and all benefits. They could give an employee the very remedy that an employee could get in court, with the exception of future loss of earnings, which he wouldn't have if he was back to work. The second really significant thing in this manual is it expressly says the decision of this hearings panel is not subject to review or appeal. It shall be final.
Was there a decision by that body?
No. Whose there burden? Was a final order, but it was not by that body.
Whose burden was it? After he was fired, he said, you fired me because you don't have just cause. You admit that the city had the burden to show that it, in fact, did have just cause, and it had the burden to show it at that administrative hearing. Do you agree with me so far?
In part.
Well, where do we disagree?
They had the burden to introduce evidence supporting the supervisor's termination. That is, that there was some evidence of just cause for firing the man. But the testimony in the record, and you'll find this at pages 739 through 744, and it's by the only permanent member of that hearings committee, the director of personnel. And with respect to burden of proof, I think the lower court made too much out of it. But what the director says is, well, we listened to the city or the supervisor's witnesses. We listened to the employee. And we try to decide it based on what we heard and saw. So insofar as there being some kind of specific burden, preponderance of the evidence, or what have you. No, they do go first. The city goes first, and they do have the duty of putting on some sort of evidence to justify it.
But if the appeal board makes no findings of fact or conclusions supporting the city and just leaves it open, haven't you failed in your burden?
I disagree with the premise. What is, you got to go back a few years to the old substantial evidence rule. And what was reviewed under that was the order. Most of the agencies did not make findings of fact or conclusions. They simply came up with an order. Some did make findings of fact, but most of them did not, particularly the Oil and Gas Division of the Railroad Commission, which was the primary administrative agency in those days anyhow. All they did was make an order. Yeah, you get a well or you don't get a well. Yeah, you can put this pipeline there or you don't.
But here we're dealing with an individual whose status, instead of an at will, has been elevated from the at will category to like a tenured employee that cannot be fired except for just cause.
Okay.
But that's different from an all-white situation.
My point is this, that we're not reviewing findings and conclusions. We're reviewing the action of the order. Now,
was there an order?
Yes, but it was by the supervisor that terminated the man.
But the approval made no order.
Yes, but the reason was, and this is in that portion of the record that I just indicated, the reason was that since Mr. Barton requested the hearing and would not go on with it, the panel concluded the hearing. Rightly or wrongly, they concluded it. Now,
they did not conclude the city had just cause. They did not conclude that the city had just caused in firing him.
No, they didn't conclude anything. Nothing. But that left in place.
Wasn't that your burden to conclude, to bring that hearing to a final conclusion of the appeals board and get a finding that your firing had been justified?
I don't think so. I think this thing is a cooperative effort.
Is that what the manual says? Does the manual say it's a cooperative effort?
No.
Does the manual say that the supervisor can issue an order?
Yes.
Where does it say that in the manual?
It's in section 9, where it talks about predetermination hearing. It's page 124 on page 4 of 7 in section 9. It says, if an order of termination is issued after the hearing, the employee shall have 5 working days.
Okay.
And then secondly, on page 126, paragraph 5, order after hearings. The order should state the date of the order, the date and place of the hearing, the findings of fact made, and the basis of the order, and the disciplinary action ordered.
Findings of fact, and they were not here.
They were made by the supervisor.
I'm talking about the appeals board, the body.
No, they did not.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, but I want to clarify this. According to my reading, and I don't have the full thing, but on the post-termination appeals hearing, it says that a 3-person hearings panel shall conduct that hearing. And I don't see anything in there where it says that once you get to the post-termination appeals hearing, that you can have an order issued by the supervisor.
No, it's a two-step process, Your Honor.
I understand that.
And you have a pre-termination hearing
right.
by the supervisor.
Right.
Now, the supervisor is required to issue a formal order.
Okay.
That is, you're guilty of these crimes. Because these are the facts,
understand
and the result
that.
Is you are terminated, you're disciplined, whatever.
Then we went beyond that.
Yes. You go to the hearings panel.
Right.
Theoretically, they are supposed to issue an order. If I ask for that hearing.
And that hearing was asked for?
It was asked for, but my contention is that two things. You have a good faith duty to cooperate with that hearing panel.
Since he didn't have any burden.
Sir?
Since he did not have any burden in that hearing, where is that good faith cooperation?
I'm going to say that's by applicable law that's cited in the brief. That you have a good faith duty to cooperate in administrative hearings. Secondly, Texas law very clearly that you have an obligation to pursue your administrative remedies to the fullest extent. He didn't. Well, and I said, well, hey, he asked for this. He quit. He walked out before the jury got started.
He gave his testimony and walked out. Like in a civil case, the plaintiff doesn't have to stay there, or a party doesn't have to stay there. It can be, and the trial proceeds.
I think, Your Honor, he never got finished with it. But they asked him a few questions, and he said, this is a kangaroo court, and he left and took some of the evidence with him. What the record shows.
Mr. O'Leary, if Mr. Barton had not requested that the hearing panel review the supervisor's decision, could he then have had the limited right to judicial review that you say he was entitled to?
My position is no. That either under administrative law or contract law, whichever way he goes, he has a duty and obligation to follow the administrative procedure laid out before he can seek judicial review by whatever means.
And that's your failure to exhaust the administrative remedies argument. Now, then it's your position, though, that by requesting the hearing, he had done all the steps that he needed to do, and that he was entitled to limited judicial review then of the supervisor's work. Not a jury trial for breach of contract then, but the substantial evidence review that he said.
But that's not really my position.
All right.
My position is that not only does he have an obligation to request it, but he has a good faith duty to help him resolve these. And secondly, he's got to pursue that. And you don't pursue it by walking out the door.
Well, what if we find that he did everything he was required to do and that the post-termination appeals panel should have reached a decision, that should have heard the evidence and rendered a decision? And what if we held that he should have done that and didn't do it? Where do we go from there?
Okay, you're still under the substantial evidence rule. Number one, there is an order. A detailed order of termination that was in effect. It had concrete adverse consequences. He was fired. He never went back to work. So there is an order that you can review.
But is that order not wiped out once you go to the post-termination?
I don't think so. I think it stays there. You know, what if he goes and says, I made a mistake? I'm sorry, I don't want this abuse here. You see, he's gone past the request. It doesn't work out that way. It's still there. There's an order with concrete consequences.
Mr.
And what you're appealing is not whatever findings were made, but you're appealing the specific order, the specific action taken with the termination.
It seems to me the best argument...
Wait a minute.
If we go back to where you are now, that he's appealing Mr. Cody's order. That particular section doesn't say that if that happens, it's not appealable, does it?
No. There's nothing.
So it's somewhat crucial then to your argument that he didn't exhaust his administrative remedies to say, in effect, that he got into the second tier before the hearing came. And you can't rely on the Cody order for the same reasons that you rely on what happens after the hearing's panel.
What I'm saying with respect to exhaustion is that if there was a reviewable order, then he's obviously exhausted. If there was not a reviewable order,
well, if Mr. Cody's termination order is reviewable, then he's exhausted his administrative efforts. So he has a right of appeal.
On substantial evidence.
Sir?
On substantial evidence.
Yes. Yes.
Well, based on that, then it's still your view that despite the fact that it changed Mr. Barton's status from at will to a just cause employee, that all this mechanism is not a contract.
No, sir.
It's nothing more than an administrative procedure.
No, sir. In the long run, I'm not sure it makes any difference, but let me answer it this way. There are some indications that there was no contract. Number one, Mr. Barton testified there was no contract, and nobody ever guaranteed him that he'd be there for any length of time. Number two.
Well, what does it mean when you say when you have a just cause and the manual gives you, doesn't that give you a right to a job, that you're going to have a job for the city as long as you do your job, and they cannot fire you except for just cause?
What I was going to say, Your Honor, is there are indications that there was no contract, but on balance, I think there was an agreement for two reasons. Number one, he signed a receipt for the policy and procedure manual, and he said, I agree to abide by this thing. Number two.
And that gives him certain rights.
Number two, and as you pointed out, they made a tremendous change in his general at-will status. But that's not the end of it. That's not the end of it. They got the administrative process set up. They've got the finality provision, and they've got this board that can afford a remedy.
A jury heard the reasons why he was fired and said the reasons were invalid, that he was entitled to.
The basic issue, yes, the basic issue, but do you find the city of Odessa had just cause? The
jury said no.
The jury said no. I didn't do a very good job.
Mr. Larry, my question is, you haven't argued here this morning, is there any issue about Mr. Barton abandoning the appeal by the action of walking out during the appellate process? I think there is some great concern that once he requests the appeal, everything's off, and the city's got to go forward, and on the appeal, it's got to meet its burden on appeal. The only issue I have concerns about in this case is, does his actions, having requested the appeal after that point, create some sort of abandonment of the appellate process to the extent that maybe he didn't exhaust his remedies?
I think the answer to that is yes, but I think instead of abandonment, you can't live under the result. But if in fact, there was an order that was appealed. If this thing was right for appealing and substantial evidence, then I'm not sure there was an abandonment.
Okay.
Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Allen Stroder, will present argument from the respondent.
As I think is apparent from the city's action here, and you can look in the exhibits as far as their memorandum is concerning the events of the day that the final post-termination hearing was determined, the city, although under the manual, was supposed to enter an order with its findings and conclusions as well, it didn't. When Mr. Barton left, they basically thought, well, gotcha. And this is what we're going to do. We're not
sure
going to enter an order. Excuse me?
Can't you non-suit?
Pardon me?
Can you non-suit? Non-suit anything else. Can't you just say, I'm sorry, I don't want to do this?
I suppose he could say, you're right. I should be fired. I don't want to pursue this.
No, you said, King's X.
I think he probably could say, I don't want to pursue the appeal anymore. I do not want to pursue the appeal anymore.
Why did he, in essence, say that? Why didn't he, in essence, say that?
I think from the records you can see where he was frustrated. That certainly does not rise to the level of saying, I'm non-suited. I guess you could say, well, to the jury, well, maybe that got into the issue a little bit more than why did you do that? Were you giving up? Did you forget it? Did you say you did not want to pursue it anymore because it was unfair? And the defendant could have asked for an issue to the jury on, which they did not, as the Court of Appeals passed on. They didn't. But he did not do anything, I believe from the record, that would be tantamount to saying, I non-sue my post-appeal rights.
But, I don't think it happened. But could it be, this action is just as consistent with, I think it's Kangaroo Court, I'm not going to pay any attention to you, I'm just going to go out and sue you. I mean, he hadn't abandoned the appeal, but has he really indicated an intent not to proceed with
the administrative remedies and just go out and sue.
I think there was some evidence that he thought it was a kangaroo court, but I don't know. But I'm not going. I don't know about the rest of the statement about it. I'm not going to abide by it.
But if we're looking at exhaustion of the administrative remedies as a requisite to going to court, don't the actions become relevant on going to the hearing, but then walking out of the hearing, and the next action that happens then is the lawsuit gets filed?
I think that would be reading a lot more into his leaving the hearing, because I think as evident from the manual, personnel manual, all he has to do is ask for the hearing. He can send a lawyer. He can not send a lawyer. He can have them meet. They can decide on their own what they want to do. He doesn't have to show up. No mandatory attendance is required. And as the Court of Appeals also pointed out, you have to contrast that with alcohol, drug abuse, and failure to report injuries on the job. People are accused of those kind of crimes because it says, if you don't show up, you just wait.
But your position, as I understand it here, is would be that if he doesn't show up, as you just now, if the appellant did not show up at all, the city would nevertheless have the obligation to go forward, present their evidence, and get a determination from the panel.
Certainly. You send your notice. I want you all to review this. I'm not going to be there. I think it's wrong, but you get your witnesses in there, and you look it over, and if you decide that's what you believe is right, that's right. There's no obligation for him to show up.
Do you have language from the manual that supports that type of interpretation?
On page 123 in the manual, as far as the alcohol-related charges, on page 124 of the manual, paragraph 12, the employee may waive the hearing, and the employee shall waive the hearing, right to a hearing, if he or she is served with notice as provided herein and fails to appear or seek a continuance with good cause within 5 days of receiving such notice.
But this wasn't the alcohol-related hearing.
No, this wasn't an alcohol-related hearing. The language is absent from the post-termination appeals hearing to be relevant to Mr. Barton.
And then you can waive it. Then what does the manual say about the duty of the city's review board? I guess we're talking about the second hearing.
Order after hearings, it states that the city's duty is to, the order should state the date of the order, the date and place of the hearing, the findings of fact made the basis of the order, and the disciplinary action ordered.
Let's assume that we disagree with you that this is just a breach of contract case and that the manual does in fact provide for administrative remedies. And assume again with me that your client, Mr. Barton, had gone through the pre-termination hearing and then had requested a post-termination hearing. Instead of the city just not reaching a decision, they said, no, we're not going to give you a post-termination hearing. What would be his remedy?
Oh, if they just had refused to give him a post-termination hearing?
And assuming again that we read this to be an administrative appeals.
No right to bring a contract action,
right.
Assume that?
Assume that.
Oh, well, he's got a vested property right because it's a just cause of
the So what would he go to court and say? What would his remedy be?
14th Amendment due process claim, basically, which would be arbitrary and capricious.
But he would say what? What would his remedy be? He said, they didn't give me a hearing, so I'm entitled to what?
I'm entitled to my job back because they didn't give me a hearing.
Would he be limited to getting a hearing? Would that be his remedy?
No, I don't believe so. He's been deprived of his vested property rights and is in fact terminated. So he would be...
So your view is...
He could also... I'm sorry.
That it's a default situation. If they refuse a hearing, that he's automatically reinstated. What happens about the supervisor's order that's in place? What do you do with that under your theory?
Yes. The supervisor's order?
Yes, it's already there.
And they deny him a post-termination uh-huh. hearing? It's, again, it's just a pre-termination hearing, and I think under the Constitution they're entitled to give a vested property right a post-termination hearing. So his pre-termination hearing is nothing.
Well, but what happens is he has a due process notice and hearing that they're going to terminate him for some reason, and he has the opportunity pre that order to come in and state his side of the case. So that seems to me to be pretty much a due process. But the appellate second part of it is, if he doesn't like what the supervisor does, he can ask for this panel hearing. And your view is that if they refuse the panel hearing, that it's a default situation and he goes back to work.
I don't know if it's a default situation. If you have the lawsuit, based upon your 14th Amendment, so you'd have to prove loss of wages up to the time, and he could also argue to reinstate them. Yes, sir. But I think
that's based on then the supervisor's order that's still in place. He doesn't automatically get to go back to work.
No, sir. I think the supervisor's order would be gone. I think it would be nothing.
Okay.
Then,
I see where you're going. Thank you.
Can you succinctly state why Mr. Barton had the right to go to court and sue for breach of contract under these circumstances?
I think in this situation, it is an employment contract. We have the you want to call it an ordinance or a contract, and we've got the acceptance by the employee receipt of the terms and conditions, and it makes him a just cause employee, that he can only be fired for the reasons outlined in Section 9 of the employee manual. I think under consideration here, he can sue in contract because this is not a rule or regulation where you're talking about rates of some commission, whether or not you ought to increase insurance rates or how much water ought to go down whatever river or what the Railroad Commission ought to do, but it's quasi-judicial in nature, and I think the court has jurisdiction to rule on it. In fact, I think the court has as much expertise and just cause and probably a whole lot more than Mr. Coco and the fire chief.
But if the manual creates an employment contract that included elevating his status from an at-will to a just-cause employee, why didn't it also create a contract between the employer and the employee relating to the administrative proceeding associated with the termination of his employment, as well as the finality provisions that are part of that contract? Aren't you teasing out just a piece of the contract and wanting to ignore the other terms of it?
Well, when you look about the finality, the manual talks, it says, it's a little ambiguous. It says the order of the board is final and may not be appealed. We didn't appeal anything. I'm assuming that, I may be wrong, you may differ, but I'm assuming we're talking about appeals within the city administrative structure, not going forward and suing contract.
Why does he get to tease out the part of the contract that he likes, which is the just cause status, and ignore the part of the contract that provides the administrative procedure that is designed to address his termination, and instead say, no thank you, I think I'll just go to the courthouse?
I don't think he did that. I think he lived up to the administrative processes. Under our arguments, we haven't agreed.
Well, if he lived up to the administrative processes, then what is the appropriate judicial review of the administrative determination? A trial de novo before a jury for just cause to determine whether or not he was fired for just cause, or a review of the administrative decision?
That's interesting because, of course, when you have an administrative order, it's trial de novo, substantial evidence, pure substantial evidence, and we don't have an Administrative Procedures Act guide us like Texas does, so which one?
We have a home rule city that has set up an administrative procedure as part of its employment contract,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
And Mr. Barton is saying, thank you very much, I'll take the just cause status, and I may go through the procedure, but if I don't like the result, I'll just go to the courthouse and pretend like none of that happened and start over again with the jury. Isn't that what he's doing?
Yes, he's suing on contract. That's correct.
All right. Why does he get to, then, a adopt the part of the contract that he likes, the just cause provision, but have the administrative procedure have no effect on his remedy?
Well, it has a lot of effect. It's much simpler, and I think the city of Odessa has a good idea. It's much simpler to have an administrative grievance procedure you can go through and air out your differences and hopefully take care of them short of some lawsuit. It would be a lot better if he could have gone there and hopefully the city would have said, well, you did not violate any rules under Section 9, and you got your job back. There would have been no need for a lawsuit.
But let's say the hearing panel concludes the proceeding, upholds the decision of the supervisor, and does not reinstate him. Does Mr. Barton then get to say, gee, thanks for that opportunity, but I don't like that result, let's forget it ever happened and go to the courthouse?
Sure. Yeah.
Why should he be able to do that, given his employment contract in the manual?
Nowhere in there does it say that he waives any right to bring action, I don't believe. You've got some language in there that's a little bit ambiguous about administrative procedure, legal action. Then the next breath they'll say, we have an independent right to sue employees or bring criminal action against them, so we don't know what they really meant. But I don't see anywhere in there that says that by accepting the benefits of being a just cause employee and us giving you some administrative rights, you waive your right to come into the court and sue on a contract. I just don't see it.
And that's a full right to sue on the contract, not a limited judicial remedy that would involve a review of the results of the administrative procedure.
That's correct. Again, I'm saying because I think the courts have the jurisdiction under the primary jurisdiction automatically. That doesn't mean the courts can't, on a judicial, quasi-judicial matter, actually try the lawsuit. I don't think they're constrained from doing that.
So in other words, the administrative proceeding is not really part of this contract then? The administrative procedures that are part of the employment manual are not part of this employment contract that he sued upon.
No, he agreed to go to that. No, they are.
They're not. That's your position.
No, my position is the administrative procedures are something that he agreed to go through. That's true.
And they have no binding effect then?
I don't believe they have any binding effect.
Mr. Schrader, okay. Let me follow up on that question. If the appeals panel had proceeded with the hearing in his absence and made findings of fact and conclusions of law concluding that there was just cause for the city of Odessa to fire him, there would not be any basis for you to file a cause of action for breach of contract in court, would there? Wouldn't you be bound by the determination by the appeals panel, which concluded that there was just cause? Wouldn't that end it?
No. I don't believe so, because I
but it didn't happen here. I mean, they left it open.
It didn't happen here, but under the contract, where it says there is provision in there that it says that the board of the board is final and is not subject to appeal. But my reading of the manual is we're talking about the appellate process within the city, not going to court and suing on a contract, on your agreement not to be discharged as a just cause. And again, the Court of Appeals didn't reach our the question I had, at least, is Mr. O'Leary in the city of Odessa came into court on the day of trial and filed a motion in limine and alleged, you really can't prove a contract case, you've got to prove some sort of substantial evidence type of case. I believe under Rule 94 that should be something that should be at least pled, some sort of notice given prior to going to trial.
What was in his answer?
Excuse me?
What was in his answer?
He did plead his favorite exhaust remedies, I think, and new official immunity.
Why did failure to exhaust remedies put you on notice of what they're claiming?
Oh, wait, that did as far as failure exhaust. I'm talking about the substantial evidence review. Okay. That was it. That exhaustion remedies didn't put me on notice. That's a whole different ballgame. Yet I suppose you could have on a plain old contract between two private individuals that had some remedies they had to go through as far as meetings, go to the board, or go to your insurance committee and have them make a ruling before you can file a lawsuit. I mean, it's not unusual to have contracts that require you to take steps to exhaust your remedy before filing a lawsuit. So I don't think that necessarily put me on notice that he was going to claim any kind of substantial evidence appeal rather than a contract case like that.
What did it put the trial court on notice?
Pardon me?
Did it put the trial court on notice the type of review that you thought was, that the city thought was appropriate for this lawsuit?
Not by pleading. Just on the day of trial, when we showed up and said, you know.
Is that the only time they took that position?
Yes, there's no, and all the cases are cited by Mr. O'Leary on substantial evidence. They have some resolution. Somebody files something. They file a plea to jurisdiction. They file a plea in faith. They file a motion for summary judgment. And it gets there. I've seen no case where they show up the morning of trial and say, well, I'm going to object to all your evidence on just cause because this is a substantial evidence review type of case. And, of course, that...
Well, but I mean, did they raise the same question when the charge conference was going on?
Yes. Yes, he perfected his evidence.
They made it clear throughout the course of the trial itself what their position was on how the trial should proceed.
Yes. Certainly.
So I guess what the trial court understood where they were coming from.
That day of trial, yes.
Can you or will you say that any of those attempts when they notified the trial court their position was untimely?
Yes, it's untimely because they didn't pleaded in the lawsuit in answer to our allegations on the face of our pleadings was a breach of contract case. That was what we had, and we show up the day of trial, and all of a sudden it's a substantial evidence review. I know it's not cited specifically in Rule 94, but surely that's a plea of avoidance. It's got to be. No matter what we prove on our contract case, we don't care. We've already had this substantial evidence.
Well, but your proof on your contract case is lack of just cause.
That's right.
And purportedly, Mr. Cody found just cause.
Yes.
So if you look at the administrative record, the issues are the same and the evidence is the same. So what else is there to talk about on this trial?
I'm sorry. I guess...
In other words, the same evidence that was put on in the pre-termination hearing by your client and the same evidence the city put on there resulted in Mr. Cody's order is the same thing that was tried to the jury in your breach of contract case, is that correct?
Oh, no. You, pre-termination hearing, you show up, your supervisor just says, I've heard you did this, that, and the other, and I don't like it. I mean, you don't bring witnesses in, and you're fired, and you're going to have a post-termination hearing. You don't have there's no evidentiary hearing at a pre-termination hearing at all. That can be as little as one, which it was in this case, and he just said, I've heard this, and you're fired. There was no examination of witnesses or anything like that at a pre-termination.
Any other questions? Thank you.
If the court pleased, the issue of substantial evidence was preserved. You do not need to plead it. Let me tell you why, against the background of a couple of principles. This court held in Gerst against Nixon that substantial evidence rule is not really a rule at all. It's a test. It's a test. Secondly, this court has held, since the substantial evidence rule was applied, that it is simply an issue of law. It has nothing to do with facts. Now, that's background. If you look in McDonald's civil practice, and it's cited in our brief, you don't have to plead Texas law from the Constitution, from the statute, from the courts. The courts and the parties are presumed to know Texas law. Texas law is the substantial evidence rule applies. As a matter of law, it is a matter of law.
Applying that rule, since there was no conclusion by the panel, since there were no findings issued by the panel,
how could that rule be applied?
How could the substantial evidence rule be applied?
Right.
Two or three different ways. One of the exceptions to exhaustion is if the hearing agency or hearing body doesn't do anything, then you have the right of appeal, bang, under the substantial evidence rule. Secondly, there was an order in effect with finding and conclusion.
Before we say that,
there could have been.
Let me just say that for purposes right now, assume that when that initial order was appealed to the three-person hearings panel, that order was wiped out, the slate is wiped clean, and we start over again. And we go in and we start this three-person hearing panel. And the guy walks in, tells the story, gets upset, and leaves. And the three-person hearing panel never issues an order, never issues any finding. The way I see it is that there is a big blank zero there to apply the substantial evidence rule to.
I don't think so. If you follow your example, Mr. Barton should have gone back to work. Just show up. The order of termination isn't there.
That aside, tell me what you apply the substantial evidence rule to.
Number one, you can appeal when there's a delay or non-action by the administrative agency.
Let me interrupt.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. If you can touch on that issue.
What's your remedy? And let's assume, I'll ask you the same question that I asked Mr. Strutter. Let's assume that Mr. Barton had asked for the post-termination hearing, and the panel said, we're not going to give you one. We're just not going to. You've already had your discussion with your supervisor. You're not going to get a hearing. What would Mr. Barton's remedy be on appeal? And what would his remedy
he
be?
He was fired. But you're assuming that the order of the supervisor.
And I'm not assuming anything. He had a pre-termination hearing. His supervisor fired him, gave him an order. He then says, I want my post-termination hearing. I have the right to it under the procedures. I want it. And they say no. So what is his remedy on appeal?
I think his remedy on appeal is possibly two things. Number one, appeal on the substantial evidence.
Well, forget, I don't care about the rule. I want to know what his remedy is. What does he get?
The second thing would be possibly a mandatory judgment to compel the agency to do something.
To do what?
Well, for me, to consider the position and the position.
Any other questions? Thank you,
counsel. I did preserve the error.
That concludes the arguments this morning. The court will take a recess until 4 o'clock.